September 3rd, 2016, to the Robbinsdale Historical Society. I am Roberta Lee Scoville Miller, born March 1941, and lived at 3843 Hubbard Avenue. I attended Lee Avenue School and Robbinsdale High School. I also had classes at Minneapolis Business School, where one of my assignments was writing about my hometown. As a parent, single, of four young children, it wasn't always easy to get to information, but I thoroughly enjoyed writing this. Dennis Scoville, my brother, often attends the Friday meetings. Time to send this on, errors and all, it adds to the charm. Sincerely, Penny. This article was written in 1976, and back then, there was a pretty standard format for how people would write the history of their local area. They often talked about geography and landscape, and then they would briefly mention Native American people, sometimes focusing on battles or interactions with settlers, and then they would quickly move on. Then they would talk about the founding fathers, the development of the area, a little bit about city government, and that was a pretty typical format for how people would write local history in 1976. But that's not the only way, and so I would really encourage you to take a look at the website for the Robbinsdale Historical Society, some of the other podcasts we've done. There's even a podcast called the Haha Wakpadan or Bassett Creek Oral History Project, and that talks about Native American history all the way up until the present in the West Metro. So there's a lot of ways to tell history, and this is just one way. So here's a take from 1976. Robbinsdale is a little city nestled in the center of Hennepin County, Minnesota. This area was originally peopled by Indians, and Hennepin County was a battleground for 200 years, between the Chippewa Indians, also known as Ojibways, and the Sioux Indians, or the Dakotas. The area now known as Robbinsdale once belonged to the Dakotas, as they were living more in the northern area of Hennepin County, near the Mississippi River. When the 3rd Territorial Legislature created Hennepin County in 1852, they divided it into sections called townships. The first claim being filed in the Crystal Lake Township was in March of that year. The developing of the area was said to be very uneventful. People just came into the area, took claim of the land, and made farms. Mr. J.P. Shumway arrived in 1855 and was almost defeated by the rattlesnakes and mosquitoes. However, he managed to farm his land by daylight and build his fences by moonlight to get his farm started. The biggest trouble at this time were the raids by grasshoppers. There were some scares by the Indians, but no attacks were actually in this area itself. If ever the Indians did come into the village for food, the settlers were glad to oblige. The first three prominent settlers were Horatio R. Stillman, Alfred Parker, and John P. Shumway. The next step in forming the area was the organization of the Township of Crystal Lake, in a meeting in which the total vote was 55. The population at this time was 1,023 people in 1869, and the total tax monies amounted to $2,927. The first flag station was built in 1880 on 3 acres of land donated by Alfred Parker and was given the name of Parker's Station. The first railroad through the area was called the Minneapolis and Northwest Branch of the St. Paul, Minneapolis, and Manitoba Railway Company, later called Great Northern. An interesting law at this time was started in 1861. Any mules breaking into any enclosures in town, the owner will be held responsible for all damages, and if there is a second offense, an additional $5 will be charged. By 1881, there were 445 horses in town, compared to 493 horses in 1889, and by 1895, there were 636 horses. This was the only mode of transportation at this time, except for mules and an occasional goat cart. Rapid growth came to the area in 1886 when Minneapolis wanted to annex all bordering townships, saying all residents were citizens who enjoyed the general benefits for which taxes were levied. To protect the township from losing territory to the town of Minneapolis, and to protect themselves from taxes, the village of Crystal Lake becomes incorporated under a special act of legislature. At this time, it was 4 miles square and exclusively agricultural. In 1869, farms in the area produced 14,416 bushels of wheat, which grew to 15,731 bushels by 1875. It now included 16 of the 24 original sections, and it was possible to organize it into villages. It was about this time, in 1887, that Andrew B. Robbins is reputed to have passed through the area on a train and found the area so beautiful he couldn't forget it. Because it was so close to Minneapolis and had its many advantages, being near water and was very scenic with many other good points, he saw it could easily be a choice residential area. He came back and bought 90 acres from the first three settlers near Parker's Station going east. This was for the purpose of making it a suburban town, patterned after the ones he had been through in his travels. He improved the land himself by planting many trees in the area, watering them and tending them, replacing any that died. He called this 90 acres Robbinsdale Park. This part of the village was now called by three names: Robbinsdale Park, which had the post office, Parker's Station, and Crystal Lake. In late 1887, Lars Nassett and his uncle came in from Wisconsin. At that time, the streetcar ended at 18th and Washington, so the two men had to walk the last 5 or 6 miles into town. Mr. Nassett's uncle was to draw the plans for the Luther Seminary. Hacken Christensen would be following later to put in the cornerstones. Lars Nassett bought some land from Mr. Robbins, with the exception that a building be finished by April 1, 1888. His April Fool joke turned out to be the first store in Robbinsdale. He and his family lived upstairs for 41 years. The building was later used as Blackie's Saloon and is still standing. He had a partner by the name of Mr. Lind, who made tin works in the back room, and they also ran their repair shop there. The first land boom came in 1888. 13 new homes were built. Parker's Addition and Brimall's were both plotted, and new industries moved in, like the Northern Car Shops and Hubbard Specialty Manufacturing, that manufactured wheelbarrows, furniture, and other goods needed. Luther Seminary was also finished on land donated by the Big Three, and the village hall was also built using plans made by Mr. Nassett's uncle. Homes built at this time were costing $1,200. They would cost $7,000 in 1929 and about $15,000 by 1949. The Big Three in the village were Mr. Nassett, Mr. Parker, and Mr. Robbins. Mr. Nassett was appointed postmaster and canceled his first letter in 1888. Until that time, the only post office was located in Shingle Creek, now known as Camden. In 1889, Mr. Robbins could see the need for public transportation and tried to get each resident to donate land or $1,000 to get a streetcar factory going, but he received very little cooperation. Despite these setbacks, however, by 1890, the first tracks were laid for the Robbinsdale streetcar, and the first car ran on May 29, 1891. 1890 was a busy year for the Little Crystal Lake area. A big growth was reported, three families moved into town, three new homes built. John Trump opened up a general store, and it was still a useful building in 1949. Mr. Trump was very busy in village affairs and served on the board for many years. The Hotel Georgia opened up with a large celebration. It could brag of a dining room, serving people family style, large living rooms, plus the kitchen. The second and third floors held the 35 guest rooms. Another building that was completed that year was the new school. When finished, it was quite beautiful with its oak wood and carved designs. It featured four classrooms, plus offices, and cloakrooms. And down in the basement was a large gymnasium and furnace room. It was called Parker's School after the man who donated the land. Spring house cleaning this year included taking down the coal stoves and putting fresh corn husks or straw in the mattresses. So far, the area was still somewhat cut off, and Mr. Robbins, always looking for progress, tried to convince the Minneapolis Street Railway to extend their lines into the township, but failing this, he organized the Northside Street Railway Company and built the road from the city limits into the village. On June 1, 1891, the line opened and was operated by horse cars for some time after that. All the progress the area was now enjoying was starting to cause friction among the residents, so much so that it was pulling the community apart. The people who lived near the town and the people who lived in the rural areas were against each other. a special election was held on March 24, 1893, voting to dissolve the village of Crystal Lake, and on April 19, 1893, the village of Robbinsdale was organized. The president elected at that meeting was A.B. Robbins. Mr. Lars Nassett was one of the trustees. Lars also had much to do with the naming of Robbinsdale. His claim was that it was easier for the railway station to change its name than it would be for a post office. The farmers were allowed to vote as to go to Crystal Lake or Robbinsdale. Mr. Stillman chose Robbinsdale, which accounts for the uneven jog in the west end of town. It was at this time that the first large leveling expedition took place, using $1,000 from the saloon fund and the $2,000 the county donated. Crystal Lake Street, later named Broadway Avenue, was cut down by 9 feet. Not all was good news for Robbinsdale this year either, for one of the first formidable fires took place and took down the car shops and the Hubbard Manufacturing, which made Robbinsdale purely residential again. This did convince the people of the need for better fire prevention equipment, so the first hook and ladder was built by the carriage factory, and a volunteer force to fight fires was set up. A more organized force was later formed with 44 members, but that didn't happen until 1894. Laws were produced, and we now had gambling ordinances put into effect on May 26, 1893. On that same date was an ordinance for loitering. Any person found within the village limit loitering about saloons, taverns, dram shops, or houses of ill fame, or wandering about the streets, whether by day or night, and not having any visible means of support, and not being able or willing to give a satisfactory account of himself or herself, may be arrested and fined $30 and imprisoned until the fine is paid. Another ordinance was no person shall drive any horse, mule, or other animal at a rate exceeding 8 miles per hour on any village, street, lane, or highway. Garbage was still a problem in Robbinsdale, and much of the blame was rightfully placed on the city of Minneapolis, who used the borderline for a dumping ground, not only for garbage, but dead animals, etc. It was at this time, in 1893, that the first telephone made its appearance in Robbinsdale. It was installed in George Swift's drugstore. All were welcomed to use the phone for whatever business they could conduct from it, and were encouraged to give what news they had to the local newspaper for the community to read. By 1939, there were 2,000 phones in the district. 1894 brought prohibition to Minneapolis, but it couldn't make Robbinsdale dry until the 18th Amendment to the Federal Constitution. This period was hard on everybody, and especially Mr. Robbins, as his houses were either sitting empty or were renting for $1.50 per month. January 1895 brought an even bigger loss to Robbinsdale. Another fire had started, and this time it involved the hard-won seminary. It was a very cold and windy day. The fire spread very fast and even ravished Professor Stubbs' library and his beautiful piano. There was no insurance carried, so many students suffered permanent loss and had to drop out of school and return to their homes. The ones that were able to stay lived at the Ivisacker home next door, and their studies were held in the lobbies of the Hotel Georgia. Because of financial difficulties, the seminary was consolidated with the one in Iowa, and the college left Robbinsdale. Mr. John Bloberger came to Robbinsdale in 1893 as the first chief of police. He was also one of the first fire chiefs, whose job was not so easy. One of his duties was to pull the hand-drawn rig to the fire many times over snowbanks. It was this time that the community began growing and forming different groups like the Library Club, Baseball Team, and the Parent-Teacher Association, or PTA. Churches were set up, city band, and the newspaper, the Robbinsdale Tell-It. At that time, the paper included a lot of the local gossip. We wonder where our money has gone to. Some of the ads in the Robbinsdale papers were March 26, 1910, L. Rice charges $1.75 to bury dead animals. May 27, 1910, handcuffs cost $1.25 a pair. June 29, 1910, work on the village hall cost $1.60. April 29th, 1911, repairs on road scraper cost city $1. August 26th, 1911, repair on tools cost $1.50. C.M. Coltier receives $2 a day for taking city census. This totaled $6 for 3 days of work. He must have had pull to get paid so well. In 1912, it took 45 minutes to get into Minneapolis from Robbinsdale. In 1913, the old Parker School had 200 students, and the building is not only too small, but very outdated. $13,000 in bonds helped to build the school now standing. Four additions have been added at different times since. 1914, the Howard Lumber Company was built to serve the North Minneapolis area and still is in full operation. World War I was furnished by many of Robbinsdale's young men. Following the war came many veterans groups with their auxiliaries, banks, lodge groups, and the Fawcett Publishing Company is formed, along with a new paper, the Robbinsdale Northern Headlight. 1920 brought the Fawcett Publications to Robbinsdale. This company had a very humble beginning in 1919 when Wilford Fawcett started writing to cheer up the veterans with his farmyard wit. Also, what this town needs: 15-minute streetcar service to Minneapolis, a first-class harness shop, public watering trough for teams, more cement sidewalks, a united move to induce farmers to market their products here and do their trading here, a cheese factory or creamery skimming station, a channel between Crystal and Twin Lakes. Two representatives were in town from the Street Railroad Company. Under discussion was benefits in double tracks for Robbinsdale. Sidewalk is now being laid from Perry Avenue to Library on 40th. H.W. Schultz of St. Paul just purchased the Osseo Press Form. Mrs. Bolig, a widow. 1930, and gas is 79. Broadway was the main street. Residential is at the south end of town, with the business district at the north, ending in a hayfield. Robbinsdale can now boast of two known bank robberies, both of which were failures. On December 2, 1921, George Farwell unsuccessfully tried to rob the bank and was shot down by Justice V.D. Crandall. John Bloberger was the officer that killed the second unknown offender on April 10, 1930. A genuine countess was imported into Robbinsdale from Bavaria on November 5, 1931, by Dr. Culp. He established her in a mansion on Broadway after their honeymoon of a world tour. The place was so large that later it was taken over and made in a Crystal Lake nursing home, where it was used as is for many years. Just recently, there were new buildings built and the old one torn down. Emergency Relief Administration. Families on relief in Hennepin County number 1,803 in March to 1,716 in April. Authorities anticipate a decrease for May, both locally and in the county. September 19, 1935, boasts of a $40,000 building boom. A list of homes being built appear in the paper, showing the rising cost of building didn't stop back in 1931. There are five builders, and it lists the cost of their homes. Don Rubel, $5,000. Ray Winslow, $2,500. Chester Weedholm, $3,500. W.E. Blake, $1,500. Emery Davis, $850. Now Robbinsdale finally has three policemen. Up until now, it only had two. There is still no free garbage collection, and the city budget is $40,000 in 1929 to 1932. And is dropped to $35,000 in 1932 until 1935. Robbinsdale's value is assessed at $1,338,937. By 1962, the assessed value is $7,153,000, with a city budget of $6,893,810. But going back in time again, we learn that on March 23, 1931, it is unlawful for anyone to let hogs and swine run loose in town except in the wintertime. On September 12th, PWA approves a high school building grant for $175,000. And in December, a $122,440 grant is allowed to actually start building the new and badly needed school. In November, we learn that television is coming to Robbinsdale, and by spring, there are 20 to 30 TVs placed in such public places as hotel lobbies, railroad stations, etc. A want ad appearing in a September 22, 1938 paper tells a little about the wages at that time. Wanted: a girl 18 years or older to assist with housework, must like children, wages $4 per week. Wow! I have discovered to my personal sorrow that many of the could-be historical buildings, some very beautiful, were just done away with when they could have been restored and kept. However, Robbinsdale is still having trouble maintaining its library without being bothered with museums or historical memories. Robbinsdale now offers a $1 service to downtown Minneapolis, an unheard-of thing up to this point in 1931. The paper is still complaining of the high cost of building. Leonard Taylor of 4127 Zane will erect a frame stucco dwelling at 3940 Welcome Avenue for $1,500. Also, Dr. Culp built a residence at 3811 Hubbard Avenue for the unheard-of price of $4,000. January of 1931, sewers were being installed in many homes that had all the modern equipment but were working on septic tanks. The only public place foremarked for the sewer system is Sacred Heart School. More good and bad news in Robbinsdale is in the July 28, 1931 paper. New Beltline. New 11-mile road having its northern terminus at the Jefferson Highway in Robbinsdale and to cost $1,134,000 will be constructed along the west edge of Minneapolis, Highway 52, and will be termed the Beltline. Bad news is that in November 1931, there are about 40 new unemployed persons registered in the month of November. However, from an edition of the May 1935 Hennepin County Enterprise, relief roll here decreased in May, an encouraging sign in local economics, is that relief rolls in Robbinsdale have dropped from a peak load of 210 families in March to a new low of 185 families. This information comes from a report made at the regular monthly meeting of Hennepin County. I discovered during a visit with Esther and Evelyn Shumway, twin granddaughters of John Shumway, that some very interesting things happened in Robbinsdale during the 1900s. Mr. Christensen, the owner of the blacksmith shop, was a tall, very likable fellow. Although he spent his leisure time playing horseshoe outside his little shop, he was never too busy to visit with the children. His shop was located where the bank now stands, kitty corner from the Congregational Church. Vern Crandall owned the livery stable next door to the blacksmith shop, and many people from the northern area would drive their horse and buggies into town, drop them off for the day at the stables, and take a streetcar downtown to Minneapolis. And you'll remember that Vern Crandall was the village constable that shot the would-be robber of the bank. Although all four Robbins' daughters were graduates of the University of Minnesota, none of them really did anything with their education. Two of the girls were married and shortly after divorced. The two younger ones were set up in a tea room shop by T.B. Walker of Walker Art Center. But they could not make a going concern of it, and after giving them money two or three times, Mr. Walker gave up the idea. Amy did do some nursing at the vet's hospital for a while before marriage. The Robbins home was very beautiful, even if the household was a bit disorganized. T.B. Walker would loan many of his paintings to Mr. Robbins for display in the Robbins home. There were many parties and influential people at the Robbins home. Many of the residents in town were related because of the intermarriage of the offspring of the first settlers. Neighbors were very friendly and would help each other and share in big jobs. Not like now, where you don't even know your neighbors to say hello, claims Esther. The Shumway girls, who still live in a beautiful modern home located on original Shumway property, remember when the grocer would come by in the morning for their grocery order and return later with the order, thinking nothing of going to the butcher for the meat or the baker for the bread orders. How I wish they would do that nowadays. When you went into town to pay your bill, the man would give you a bag of candy, and there were paper dolls to be found in many bread wrappers. One of the favorite pastimes were hopping onto the runners of passing sleighs and riding down the street. Another would be to run behind the ice man, getting chunks of ice to chew on, and when the truck was empty, you were able to ride. They also remember going with their father in the morning to deliver the milk to the neighboring farms. There was much fighting between the adjoining farmers, the Duttons and the Shumways, because the Dutton cows were always getting loose and eating the Shumways' corn. They never did ever straighten that mess out, claims Esther. the Osterhus family made their money on a mail-order Bible study that would offer a certificate at the conclusion of the course claiming you to be an ordained minister. However, that was a bit illegal and disappeared from the market. They do still operate a book and Bible store in Robbinsdale, so the penalty must have been slight. Cedric Adams started his career in the Fawcett Publishing Company as associate editor, helping to write many of the jokes and stories printed in the Cap'n Billy's Whiz Bang. Later, he was launched into radio and then his own paper column. The highlight of the summer was the arrival of the Chautauqua Group, who would arrive into town with boxes of costumes and put on plays. One lady would take all the children and teach them a skit for them to put on the last night of the 10-night span. These groups were held on the corner of the Shumway property, closest to town, and the grasses, etc., would be mowed down by John Shumway while the girls could watch on. December 8th issue tells us something of the cost of living. Butter was 30 cents a pound. Ham was 18 cents a pound. Pork chops, 18 cents a pound. Pork loin roast, 20 cents a pound. Hamburger, 25 cents for 2 pounds. Bread, 10 cents a loaf. Beans, 5 cents a pound. 3 pounds of coffee, 45 cents. Cheese, 17 cents. Robbinsdale hasn't progressed much since 1953, except for the new Civic Center, built in the spring of 1970. The largest change most people will see is that next to the Terrace Theater that was built in the mid-1950s is the large Ward's store next door. The fact that the main street of Broadway seems to be losing its businesses and that Highway 52 is getting to be more like the main street with all the food chain places like McDonald's, Embers, etc. The older buildings that were emptied and taken down are now convenient parking places for newer businesses. Robbinsdale has no factories or large companies within its boundaries to help its economy and is at present having trouble keeping up with street repairs, library costs, etc. I pray Robbinsdale will not give up and end up being part of Minneapolis, as has been under discussion many times. The council in early 1976 will be meeting to find solutions to these problems, and I hope they do. It is sad to think these small towns can and may die out. Hang in there, Robbinsdale. Milestones of Robbinsdale. 1852. The first land claim was filed on March 26th in the area which was to become Crystal Lake Township by John Ware Doe. The second claim was filed by John C. Bohannon on March 27th. 1853, the first school outside Minneapolis was erected in the Crystal Lake area. 1860, Crystal Lake Township is organized. This includes part of Golden Valley, New Hope, Robbinsdale, and the Camden area. 1880, the first railway flag station is set up and was called Parker's Station after the man who donated the land. 1887, Lars Nassett built the first store. This is also the same year A.B. Robbins passed through on a train and, being very impressed, comes back to buy land and develop the area. 1887 to 1888, Hacken Christensen builds the first blacksmith shop, the first land boom, and A.B. Robbins has a building boom. He built 13 houses that year. 1889, Luther Seminary was dedicated. It was located on College Street, later named Regent Avenue. 1889, Congregational Church was built on land donated by Mr. J. Shumway. The original 28 members came from a Salvation Army meeting held at the Village Hall. 1890, John Trump opens the first general merchandise store. It is also the year Hotel Georgia opened. It was known as a temperance house, and the opening was celebrated with an oyster dinner and dancing. 1891, A.B. Robbins builds a streetcar line from the city limits to Robbinsdale and was first run by horse car. 1893, Crystal Township dissolved March 24th and the village of Robbinsdale was organized on April 19th. 1908, Robbinsdale Tell-It newspaper was founded July 8th and published papers for 12 years until 1920. 1920, June 28th, the present library opened to the public. 1930, work finally started on the sewer system. In 1928, a $250,000 bond issued to finance the system was defeated. 1938, Robbinsdale becomes a city. 1953, the old Robbinsdale Village City Hall was torn down. 1970, a new and beautiful community center was built. Government of Robbinsdale. 1893 to 1938, Robbinsdale was a village. The election of November 1938 changed it to a city. December 8, 1938, the Home Rule Charter was officially adopted. The area of the city has remained the same, approximately 2.9 square miles. 1965, the mayor-council form of government was changed for a council-city-manager system. The government body consists of four aldermen and a mayor, elected for staggered four-year terms. Residency is the only requirement for these offices. The administration of the city government is the responsibility of the city manager, who is appointed by the council. The city manager makes recommendations to the council, but the policy for the city is formulated by the council. The city services are in five divisions: public safety, public works, administration services, planning and redevelopment, and community services. Thanks for listening. I'm Crystal Boyd. Robbinsdale Revisited is brought to you by the Robbinsdale Historical Society. Our little history museum is located at 4915 42nd Avenue North in the heart of Robbinsdale. We're open Fridays and Saturdays from 10 to 3. You can also visit us online at robbinsdale.org. You found this episode, so you know where to find the next one.
Bicycle into the city every Saturday to see our friends. In bus back home, sitting hand in hand. When the evening ends, when the evening ends, when the evening ends, in Robbinsdale.
Our theme music is provided by Gabe Barnett and Them Rounders.
Oh, yeah.